Welcome, everybody. Hi, good to see you. It's Saturday, and welcome to the BBOL show featuring NJ Chat with Nikita and Jewel. I'm Nikita.
And I'm Jewel.
And welcome, everyone. We do this every Saturday at 12 p.m. Eastern Time on Chatmosa, and this is Blurred Words. So last week, we did, and good to see you, Jennifer. And last week we did we did Damascus Part 1, episodes 1 to 3. Damascus is showing on Tubi. Damascus is spelled with a DEMASCUS, and it's really, really a good show. And I think it's important in these last three episodes, 4, 5, and 6. Were interesting to me, but first we're going to do a recap. Jewel, can you, how about that recap?
Okay, recapping Damascus on Tubi, episodes 1, 2, and 3. Good morning, good afternoon, good night, y'all. All right, Damascus is about a 33-year-old black man who finds himself lost in his identity, in where he is, not feeling great, feeling kind of out of place, and delves into therapy as a way to help him tether himself into reality. Grasp onto what's going on and why he feels the way he does. It is triggered by a situation that happens at work where he's walking to the break room and he hears his coworkers say something pretty callous and flippant and say, "Well, you know how Damascus is." And he feels really bad about that. And he doesn't know why that bothers him. And it has bothered him for a few days. So he goes to therapy. And there he meets the great Aunt Viv, Janet Hubert, thespian that she is, and all give her all her accolades because she is fabulous in this show, as well as all the other shows she's been in. And she plays a therapist, and she tries to help this younger man reach the problems that he seems to be covering up and grab a hold onto the reality he wishes he had, the reality he's living now. And she does this through an experimental project of alternate reality using a tool that virtually taps into his brain. It's called DIRT, which is an acronym that stands for Digital Immersive Reality Therapy. And it's really dope. He's in this therapy session with Aunt Viv and Janet Hubert, and she puts on the virtual headset on him, and it goes over his brains, his like his skull, not like internal brains, but it's tapping into his thought process, right? Not quite the glasses that we're used to seeing in other adaptations of virtual reality. We don't see his eyes covered completely. We actually get to see his facial expression. So we feel like it's tapping into the brain waves directly. Okay. And we get into scenarios of his life. We meet his best friends. We see himself at work. We see him interacting. We find out that he has a long-term girlfriend, and we get into his relationships or the relationships that lack substance, right? The lack thereof of relationships. We have a lot of themes in this show, and the one that stuck out to me in episodes 1, 2, and 3 is a black man trying to survive in a world that's constantly telling him who he is, what he's supposed to be, how he does not measure up, and how much he does not fit in. It's responding. His actual response is now what we see in reality. We see him feeling kind of ostracized, awkward, not mingling with individuals, not getting engaged, not unsure, not really surely footed or stepping into the world with strength and character. The first episode, his sister gets nearly choked out, beaten up by her boyfriend. Turns out he needs help to roll up on the brother that did this. And it's very stereotypical. We have a lot of stereotypes throughout the entire show. And I think that's one of the things we're trying to combat. What stereotypes make us feel uncomfortable? Which ones we don't want to have associated with us? Which ones make us alter the manner in which we perceive ourselves or walk through life? So it's really in-depth, multi-thematic, very Black. And again, a male's perspective about a male's perspective in the world. And it's layered. Layered reality, layered themes, layered Blackness, layered definitions of items, and technology. It's very sci-fi and it's very dope. Again, the first one was called Pilot. The second one was Establishing Episode. The third one was called Anthology. After the sister needs help for her boyfriend, a lot of drama ensues. We have Lawrence Martin in it. And he's the uncle who's always trying to be the patriarch and guide his family in the right direction. And someone ends up dead mistakenly for something that should not have happened, but everybody else judging everybody anyway. Episode, the second one, we have an explanation of how he feels or sees himself sexually, or how he perceives his girlfriend sees him sexually. We have a lot of art, a lot of play on adult themes. And then Anthology, we have a continuation of the second one, where he has to force himself to act as though he's not repressed. This is how he feels, but he goes about it in the most sacrilegious of ways. And so that's episode one, episode two, episode three, leading us into episode four. And we'll go four, five, and six today. So far, we had positive reviews from the last podcast. We enjoyed the discussion. The discussion was deep. It was heavy and it touched a lot of themes. And it was very, very interesting. And what we said throughout was it was a shame that AMC dropped it. We were happy that Tubi picked it up. And it was great to see the actors given a chance to do something new and nuanced in terms of sci-fi, Blackness, and the other themes that we discussed. Hopefully that was a good recap. Welcome to Damascus, episodes 4-6, part 2, Blurred's Word, BBOL show with Nikita and Jewel. Nikita?
Thanks, Jewel. No, that was a great recap, as a matter of fact. And thank you for breaking it down in such an, really cool way, and real way. Authentic, I'll say. That's going to be my new word of the day. I'm going to be saying that a lot. Authentic. I think it takes a lot of courage to do a show like this. I think that last week it was, we were putting out, look, this is a good show. This is a smart show. This is a intricate show. In episodes 4, 5, and 6, kind of change it up, right? It's interesting that it's labeled a sci-fi comedy because there are funny aspects, but it's also funny aspects of how people look at life. But what this gives us is a view. We're three Black women who are, and I can't speak for Jennifer and I can't speak for Jewel. I can speak for me. I'm an older Black woman. And as I was like looking at the life of this young man, Damascus is 33 years old, played by, and last week I did not mention his name, and I'm very remiss in that. Okeoriete Ona Odoan. I think I'm pronouncing his name correctly. He played in Hamilton, Station 19. Oh, yeah. And Grey's Anatomy. Our guest Jennifer always, I'm interested to see what our guest Jennifer shows us in her feelings on this at the end. So I'm thinking that it's going to be as interesting because this is a generational room. And for those of you that will be listening to this podcast later, I think that this speaks to one, the nuance of Black men in the community, and how Black folks are not a monolith, meaning we are not the same. We are different. And I really thought as I was watching that, and I rewatched it, this young writer is giving us an insight into how he feels, right? Because when you write the story, when you present the story, when you give the dialogue for the audience, you're giving a little of yourself into that, right? I thought this was pretty courageous, these last three episodes. Number four, and I'm going to go ahead and go on into it. Jewel and I, when we host these things and doing this podcast, we talk back and forth all the time. And it is an interesting dynamic how we both look at things differently and similarly. So I am going to be very interested in Jewel's, how she sees it. Specifically, because we've already talked about it. See, I've already heard how, but I'm going to think as we go into this and we go into this dialogue, do things change? Is there more information? Is this really a true aspect? We can't know because we're not men, but I will tell you what it did give me was an insight into depression, an insight into anxiety, an insight into, how we exist in this world without the most important person in our lives that we think. In episode four, which is the Thanksgiving episode, it starts out with Damascus alone in his apartment. And he's missing his mom. And his friend Red is calling. And he doesn't answer the phone. His mom died 5 years ago. I felt that so hard, personally. How you feel lost. The thing that tethers you sometimes, and how do you move on, and how do you go on? It was pretty deep. It was impactful. It also shows Red is calling, and Damascus, when he finally answers the phone, you know, Red's like, "How come you're not answering, man? You're ignoring me." And he's like, "Cause I didn't want to answer. You know, I feel down." And he's like, "Well, my mom's inviting you Thanksgiving dinner. Oh, by the way, the amazing Lynn Whitfield is in this." I would be remiss if I did not say, I love that they have three legends and, you know, Martin Lawrence, Lynn Whitfield, Janet Hubert. And Lynn Whitfield is her resume is impeccable. I mean, all of them, their resumes are legendary, and I'm glad to see them getting work. So when Red says he's not coming, I'm like, okay, so his mom put him up to call him because moms know, right? And, you know, Damascus like is like, I don't want to come. And he instead, you know, goes and puts himself, he does something that he's not supposed to. He goes and he gets, rather than go to Thanksgiving with them, he goes through, uses dirt and goes through the alternative timeline again. The escapism route. It's escapism. He's lonely and he goes to escape to something that makes him preferably more happy. I thought that was interesting. I thought that was real. I think also that he doesn't understand that he's addicted. We brought that up last week, that he's addicted to the unreal. Sometimes the real becomes overwhelming. The real is he's alone on Thanksgiving. The real is his mom has passed away. The real is he's even getting empathy and sympathy from watching this guy on this commercial about his dog and how much he misses his dog, you know, which, you know, puts into, I guess, the loss of an animal. I understand that too. But watching that, he doesn't have an animal. He doesn't have a pet. But he misses his mom. And he goes to, you know, things that remind him of her on the counter. It was very, very deep. And I thought about that. And I had asked Jewel, I said, do you think that men talk to each other? You know? And, you know, I'll let her answer that herself. But for me, the men in my life, they don't communicate that way. Men in my life are older. But the young men in my life, the young boys, they talk about everything. But we're looking at this age at 33. Is it difficult to feel like you're apart when you're apart? And is it something that there's this expectation of what masculinity is, this expectation of what family is, this expectation of what in who we present to the world? And is Red, these questions are going to come up. Is Red really his friend? I think Red's his friend, as much a friend as he can be, as another young man, another young Black man who doesn't want to see his friend alone. And I thought it was very telling when he said, you know, yeah, maybe whatever. And he goes, and Red says, I'm always reaching out to you. If I don't call you, you won't call me. We have all, at least for me, I know people like that who check up on you, but you don't check up on them. You know, you take for granted who they are. And as we move on, you'll see he's finally, when he acknowledges Red as his friend, Red doesn't turn out to be his friend. Jewel?
Thank you so much. Thank you, Nikita. That, I agree. We did have that conversation. Do men have these conversations? And I think it's all nuanced, and I think it's all relative. The men in my life, as I grew, they do talk. The man that raised me, who was my father, Papa, he was born 1920s. And he talked all the time. Matter of fact, he was the emotional one between him and my mother and mama. And she was older. And the joke was, he was the emotional one and mama was the strong one, the distant one. I think it's difficult, depending on where you are and who you are in the room. But this show was about grief. And like you said, depression, anxiety. Stationary. I think it's interesting that the metaphors in this one is all circled around where you feel strong in your community, in your circle, your tether. And the grief for him is the loss of his mom. And if she's the tether and she's gone, if we go back to episode one, as we had these conversations before, the therapist tells him, you need to write in this book. You need to write in your tether, because if something goes wrong, we need to be able to reset you. And he kind of blinked and said, reset? What do you mean? Why do I need to do that? It was too much for him to do. He felt, and it makes sense because he's coming there empty. He's an empty soul. At least that's what he feels. He feels there's no substance. He feels floating. He feels alone. He feels as though there's nothing holding him firmly. There's no tether. There's nothing about him that stands out. There's nothing about him that's important. He's just living, existing in a life. And she says, well, I mean, if you don't do that, there's a lot of side effects and death. Death is real. I need to be able to reset you. And he goes home and he, on the episode one, puts down the book, which she has said is his tether. And he's supposed to fill it up with substance. Fill it. Fill it up with all of the things that make him him. And he tells to kind of link sync it with it, hoping that maybe she can fill it in. And she's like, well, I don't see nothing. I mean, what? And the tether says, hi, I'm your assistant tether, blah, blah, blah. Some white man's voice. And it says, who is your family? I don't have any. And he names his mom, who's deceased. And then he says, oh, wait, maybe I should put my friend in there. And he says, Red, and maybe Buddy, the long-term girlfriend. But other than that, it's empty. It's an empty life. It's an empty existence. There is nothing firmly in it. So we fast forward to episode four, five, and six. Should anything happen, which we know something does happen, what is there to reset him with? Nothing. There's nothing there. And we know that if the big theme that follows him through is the loss of his mom, that was a tether. That was a substance that created and made him feel as though he was securely in the world and she's gone. it makes sense that in episode one, there was nothing there. There's nothing to, nothing of importance, nothing that mattered, nothing meaningful, nothing that was worth doing. I don't know, Martin Lawrence, sorry, I'm a little dyslexic sometimes. Martin Lawrence, he tries to be the patriarch, and every time he shows up, he tries to add substance. He tries to be there. He tries to have the conversations. In this Thanksgiving episode, he's having a conversation with Red's dad. And he wants to know, y'all going to get married? You're going to do this? He is trying to have these conversations. And he's older in the show. So he is the elder. And he says it often. I'm the patriarch. I'm running this family. Y'all need to roll up. Like in the first episode, he can't believe the shenanigans that are happening. Like, what you doing? We're supposed to do something. The recipes have been lost. And so they're having this conversation. And I'm thinking, that's what I remember. I remember the men in my family having conversations. Not whether or not the women were allowed to be part of it. That's another story. Sometimes they were and sometimes they weren't. And sometimes the women were having their table talk. And sometimes the men were outside playing at dominoes and smoking cigars or whatever. And they were having their table talk. But there were conversations had. And then as they got older and the family got bigger and we had more youngins around, I saw the men in my life try to sit them down and give them the firm talking to and the meaningful talks that were important. I knew, I talk about it often, like in real life, I knew I better not be coming home with any kind of bruises on me as if I didn't throw hands, and I better see the face of that other person. They better look worse, because if I came home and had my butt whooped and I didn't give as good as I got, I was going to get another beating. All right. And that may not seem like it was a lot, but there were conversations of emotion and where you stand and what society sees of you. And I'm a girl, but I was, whether I was supposed to be or not, in those rooms with the men in my life, you know, letting people know, letting the men in the life and young boys in their lives, what it meant to be a man, what you were supposed to be doing. And they were having emotional conversations. They weren't crying or nothing, but it was something. Now, there are a lot of moments where we don't see those conversations had. I have a lot of cousins that don't have those conversations with their sons. And it is very evident. And again, I'm a woman, so I'm a Black woman. I can't speak to what it is to be a Black man in this world, in this society. I cannot. But I definitely see that there is a disconnect. I have young men in my life that have gone astray, and they felt as though they did not have the meaningful, insightful conversations or guidance they were supposed to have. Now, I saw it a different way, but I mean, that's a thing, you know. I just think it's wonderful that we're seeing art form speaking on it without being denigrative. You know, this, it didn't feel, and again, I'm not a Black man, so maybe they feel differently. But for me, it felt like this was a chance to sit down, take a breath, take a beat, take a step back and analyze how we're feeling in this world, and with no judgment. And we hear that in episode 4, 5, and 6. Every once in a while, we hear the word no judgment. You know, we hear, am I going to be judged for this? You know, in episode 5, there was a lot of judgment, but that was kind of gross. But Thanksgiving, there was so much, there were so many themes there. I don't know what I felt. In terms of friendship, I'm going to say that I think Red was a friend in so much that he could be a friend, but I never took him as a good friend. That's not to say Damascus is a good friend. I mean, they don't, you know, they're not mutually exclusive, right? For me, I saw Red doing what he did with a girlfriend and Buddy and putting his friend on blast and also slipping him the digits at the art gallery and also doing all these things to make him uncomfortable instead of bringing him in. Yeah, he sought him out. Yeah, he called, but people could call you all the time and then use you. People can call you all the time and not really care for you. People can do the due diligence of making sure you exist, but then walk all over you. I don't know. I think every time I saw Red, I was like, man, Damascus is going to get used, made fun of, or mistreated. That's how I saw it. And from my perspective, I'd be like, why even call this person? Why even return the call? Why have that in my life just to say that somebody called me? I don't know. So I kind of felt that. And it was very evident that the moment Damascus takes responsibility of not being a good friend, because he's not either. I didn't see very many good friends in all of this. Only Drew. And he's beating up the sister. So he's not even good in terms of a person. But actually, Martin Lawrence is pretty good. Unk is good. And he's straight out really, really a wonderful person through and through when you see it work out. But I think when he decides to take responsibility, Damascus does, he then is met with, man, I take the onus, I take the responsibility, I decide to be a better person and finally trust you. Because in the Thanksgiving episode, which is episode 4, they have a heart to heart, they have a conversation, and Red is like, why didn't you even tell me you were in therapy? And Damascus is like, why I gotta tell you that for? That's none of your business. Maybe I don't. And eventually he blurts out, maybe I don't trust you. And Red is like, see? He goes, no, that's not what I meant. Red says, no, that is exactly what you meant, but I'll go a step further. Maybe we should go deeper. You don't trust anybody. I felt that. Because I don't. And that's real. But what has Red done to earn the trust? And every time there was moments of vulnerability, he has been harmed. So now we fast forward and he finally says, I'm going to be better. I want to be a better person. I'm going to be a better friend. You've always been there for me, which I disagree with. But Red is no longer Red. He is Blue. And his biggest fears come to life that he shouldn't have trusted him. He really shouldn't have. That his gut feeling of not trusting him was correct. And I think it's multi-layered, you know, themes upon themes of, but what if you did think this way and everybody's like, nah, you're the problem. You're wrong. This is not right. And then all of a sudden, you should have thought that way from the beginning, you know, because you weren't wrong from the beginning. And we get that theme later on too, where he says, you know, but that's paranoid. He's a paranoid person. Yeah, but just because it, you know, just because you think everybody's coming after you and you're paranoid, don't mean they ain't coming after you. So, you know, sometimes your thoughts are real because the stuff you're thinking is real. It's a lot. It was heavy. Thanksgiving was funny and offensive and ridiculous. And no, I've never seen a cast iron skillet crack like that. Just because you put in a washing, the dishwasher. No, you do not put it. Let's be clear. Never put it in the dishwasher. I'm just going to let you know that's not something we do. But had that, I mean, I would be like, what kind of kryptonite you got in that dishwasher? Is this some kind of, must be one of them technologically advanced dishwashers that scrubs off not just dirt, but cast iron? I mean, you know, like, I don't know. I mean, dang. What kind? I don't know. That pressure and force of that water must have been, I was speechless. Talking about the cornbread tastes like slavery. That was kind of real, but offensive. So, I don't know. I didn't know whether to laugh, whether to cry, whether to agree, whether to disagree. I don't know what to do with that. And I'm telling you right now, for all the future friends I may or may not have, all the future individuals that may or may not talk to me in the future, people I may like, people I may dislike, people I may date, people I may not date. Progeny, if you are listening to this, if you ever try and confiscate my plate on Thanksgiving, Christmas, a birthday shower, a repast, a wake, a funeral, a baptism, a birthday party, a 4th of July, a holiday, a barbecue, you know, anniversary, family reunion. If you come near me and my plate to try and take the plate away from me, you're finna die. The fork I am using as my utensil to put the food in my mouth will be the evidence given to the judge of the fact that I done killed you dead, like beyond dead. Like, I know you did not roll up on me when I have a plate of food. Talk about you gonna take it away. Like, no, we don't do that. We don't do that. So I thought that was kind of, I was the only one that was real, like I said, was Onk Martin Lawrence. He's like, you better walk back up, back away. And she called him an ignoramus. So I was like, what? You trying to take his food? Like, who is who, ma'am? Who is who? No. My plate of food? What? My plate of food? Hey, no. We wait 365 days a year for this plate of food. You finna come and take my plate of food? Oh, I don't think so. That was serious to me. People may have thought that was a funny episode. That was tragic. It was sad. So it broke me. It broke me like the cast iron skillet on the inside. Like, I was mourning for the food. And the food in the sink, she done took it away from everybody. And I was like, what? No, that didn't make no sense to me. So yeah, that would have been a problem. But okay, Nikita.
I'm sorry, but yeah, I feel like you hangry right now, Jewel. But so yes, it was.
I wouldn't go there. Not today.
Yeah, it was tragic. I thought they played their roles on here, but you know what? I also thought to myself, Terrence Arbrill, man, what kind of women were in your life? That's a harsh mom right there. You literally starving on Thanksgiving. Nobody starving on no Thanksgiving, baby. Okay, let's just keep that a buck. You know, I just thought it was so interesting. But I want to say this, and I want to thank you, Jewel, for everything that you said. It's thoughtful, right? Because I was really thinking about what you were saying. And in part of that, I want to say on this episode, episode four was brave for a lot of reasons. Okay. One, because of the grief aspect of it too. Right. But the interesting part to me was he can choose this. He chose that timeline to go and find, his idea of family. Right. And it was not only an alternate reality, but it was an alternate lifestyle. And I thought, well, that's brave, because people watching now, you know, we live in a really super judgy society, but our community, through many, many, so you have an older generation, you have a middle generation, you have a younger generation. How is this being viewed? You know, out of curiosity, I went and looked at some reviews, and I went and looked at what people thought. Some people on social media thought about this particular episode. And I said, this is brave, because they'll either not watch anymore. Okay. Or they'll watch it, because younger people are more, you know, like, this is, you know, gay people exist. That's life, right? No judgment. Then there's older people. And I just thought it was brave. And I thought it was interesting the way that it was written. And I thought also that, no sir, no ma'am, I'm not taking responsibility for something that you did. One, because what black person puts a skillet in the dishwasher, I don't give a pooter pooter. You're raised from young not to do no nonsense like that. You done rubbed off all the seasoning of many generations and lifetimes. What are you talking about? So, you know what I'm saying? And on the thing, so, and then two, you know, it was interesting to me how the writer saw Red's mom, Lynn Whitfield, as this abrasive, dominant woman, and the husband as a henpecked husband, you know, because the camera keeps flashing back and forth. His view, him looking her, and how scared Red is of his mom, you know, not because, you know, of the lifestyle that he's living. They've come to accept that, right? And there is this thing, and it is a pervasive theme of how Black men should be or how we perceive men, right? And Red, his father says, you know, I know he did it. I know he, my son is trifling. You know what I mean? And then I'm not gonna fib, you know? When he said, when they asked, when 40, Uncle 40 and the father asked about if they were gonna be married, I went, oh my gosh, two Black men asking about this gay marriage thing. I never would have thought, you know? Good writing. I think that this was 2023. I think that's real. I don't, you know, we all have whatever we have in our families and our situations and our old ideas. And that follows in some things. The more things change, the more things stay the same. You know, the thing that stays the same is you don't put a cast iron skillet in the dishwasher for a lifetime. She broke down that whole enslaved history of that skillet. Okay. Then when she tasted it with the aluminum foil, you know, it didn't taste like slavery. I was like, oh no, slavery. I wish I would say something like that when my mom was alive after she cooked all that food and everything and said, this tastes like slavery. I probably would have been slapped out of 10 universes. Okay, so I was like, oh no. And then, you know, how tense everyone was. And then she took the plate, like I said. Ain't nobody letting nobody starve on Thanksgiving. People be waiting all day to eat on Thanksgiving. People been cooking since like 0:30 in the morning for all the people that are coming over, and the aunties bringing the bad potato salad, and you know you got the other potato salad and the dressing, and then you don't know who else is coming. Possible raisins in the potato salad might come over to the house, so you got to cook all this other extra to make sure that everything is good. You know what I'm saying? You got the dressing, you got the turkey, you got... I don't know how everybody else Thanksgiving. Ours is just huge, all different kinds of everything. You know, we got turkey. We got, I don't want to say swine, but y'all know what I'm saying. For those that eat that, I do not know. You know, my mother used to look at me and my siblings like, since when don't y'all eat ham? You grew up on that. Nah, we don't touch that. Okay, we don't do the pork. But my mom would make duck. She'd do that. She'd do potato salad, dressing, cornbread, greens, you know, all that, you know what I mean? Some people say stuffing, some people say dressing, you know, and in my family, it was just a big thing. And then all these people come over. Nobody's taking nobody's food. Ain't nobody crazy, okay? Because everybody's stomach is grumbling by then. When are we going to eat? So, you know, I was kind of traumatized by that, as Jewel was. And then I thought to myself, this is a brave storyline, though, you know, and it's an interesting storyline. And then how, you know, Red seems so, I don't know, like skeevy with how he did it. And then sitting there knowing that he's the one that did, you shouldn't have put that in there. He's lucky all homeboy did was just back him up, you know. And I thought to myself, yeah, you tried to be the good guy and you didn't know the whole story. And then you didn't know the audacity of the mama, and then the father, who really truly understands his son, and then the kind of sadness of 40, who's like, you got to make a choice, you know, and literally he's talking about himself, or you'll end up alone, you know, jumping off on your own nephew's Thanksgiving because you don't have nobody, and this ain't even someone that you hang out with that much. You know, that was real, and that was kind of interesting. I thought it was good writing. I thought it was brave once again, because, you know, our community, though not a monolith, we, or, you know, meaning that not everyone thinks the same and is the same. Generationally, we got a long ways to go. And each generation, I think, has an idea. I thought it was good writing, and I thought it was a good storyline. Episode 5, though, which I thought was, more like, it's called Penultimate, episode 5. When you really got to see I don't want to miss out on the reality TV show part, right? The reality TV show thing was bizarre. Okay, because we live in a lifestyle where everybody watches the reality TV shows, you know? And he marries a stranger, you know, I guess kind of like a Love Island thing. And they're doing their thing. And you get to see another thing with him and Buddy again. This problem that he has, really seeing her as a true, he's married to her, but, you know, still awkward with her. And still, he prefers the bugs. You know, he's talking about these bugs and bugs children. And things look like little roaches or roly-polies or whatever. I don't know. It was kind of grotesque. And I was like, you so lonely, bruh. You got bugs. Okay, wowzers. What black man does that? But that's the point, right? We're not a monolith. I mean, he's awkward. He's a nerd. You know, he's got this beautiful woman. And she's trying to adjust to him. She's trying to be the woman he wants. She's trying to engage in his life, in his interest. But, you know, he gets caught up in his thing, and he's still grieving his mom. And, you know, interesting, the dynamic in the bathroom, don't touch the mother's ring. And then that story goes on, and then you see, because he's got his mother's hand, creepy. So we go there with that. I thought that was interesting too. He's got serious mommy issues, which we knew from the beginning, but we didn't know how serious, and we don't know how hard it goes through. And then we go into episode 5, the penultimate, you know, he has to give this speech, and Red is again there, you know, and this is also an alternate timeline, by the way, the real him, after she has called him out, after the therapist has called him out for, you know, getting addicted, breaking into her office, all of this, right? And he goes into this alternate timeline where his mom is alive, but you don't get a clear picture of his mom. And what that told me is his whole life, he didn't see his mom. He knew she was his mom. She had expectations of him, but he didn't see her because he didn't know her. But he grieves her, like in a real timeline. He grieves the loss of her, or the loss, or the tether that she was to him. The tie he had to family, because he didn't know his father. That was the tie he had to family. And there's some resentment, real deep resentment, even in the speech he's going to give. Red talks about how great she is, how much everyone loved her. And in this timeline, he's a writer versus being an artist, right? Graphic designer. She is a teacher, you know, an educator, and the kids love her. And she did for other kids. Even hear the resentment about her getting shoes for this kid, right? And then Red had to point out he never had any shoes. Talk about selfish. Talk about tied up. Talk about, you know, not really getting the big picture of your mom educated and taught and cared. And then she raised you. And she saw in you the furtherance of a dream of, you know, you being a writer and you being better and you, but you didn't see that. All you could see was a woman that maybe pushed you too hard in your mind, or that was grand, you know, important. And you felt like she didn't see who you were. She didn't see your loneliness, or she didn't see, you know, who you were as a man. You know, I thought that was really, really interesting. And as he goes to give the speech, and again, we keep seeing the silhouette. 40's speech, I thought, was deep. Because while Damascus is grieving the loss of his mom, and Red is grieving the loss of a mentor and a good woman and his friend's mother, Damascus, I think, is just grieving, I don't know, the loss of who he thinks he is or should have been or wanted to be. And I think when 40 talked about it, I was like, this man is grieving the loss of his sister, someone who accepted him no matter what and was important in his life. And I thought all of these things were so real. Like, she would do his homework for him, and he was like, don't make it too smart because they know I'm not smart. And she said, so I'm going to do it not smart. So I thought that was cool sibling thing, a sibling reality, right? And we see generational men here, by the way. And I also want to give the writer credit for the way that he handled the older adults, that, you know, the older stars, with dignity and respect, giving them good lines, by the way, and allowing them to show their true acting chops for those that may not know who they are. In a time where ageism is so prevalent and so just really, really reductive, he showed them in a real way, and he has an opportunity for another generation to know these great actors that I grew up with, that you grew up with. You know, we have seen them and their resumes and historical aspect, how important they are to cinema, to media, you know, to the arts of TV, and et cetera, I guess. So I said, wow, these lines are very intentional and very deep. Whereas we laughing, enjoyed the first three episodes, hey, we get real in 4, 5, and 6 about this timeline and the effects of it and the reality of living in an unreality. Because after the penultimate, where he goes into a seizure, right, in episode 5 and episode 6 in season 2 prequel, interesting name, you know, one thing, and I talked with Jewel, I said, you know, the therapist didn't say, don't use dirt in your timeline, you know, that might cause a short circuit and that caused the seizure and caused all of this stuff to happen. I was like, wow, that's pretty intense, because now we don't know what's going on. And I think the writer did a very good job in prepping us for possible season 2, because we are not sure now. Is it real? Is the asylum real? With every single character, by the way, which was in episodes 1, 2, and 3, every single character, right? Including the sister. So does he have really have a sister? Well, you know what? In this episode, he knew about the baby. He knew about the boyfriend. He knows things. So is the other one his reality, where he's Damascus, or is the reality where he's Demarcus? And his tether, which was empty, which Jewel and I had this conversation about, you know, and she was breaking it down, and she can break it down again, because it's an interesting thing how I saw it, how she saw it, and how we both literally saw some of the same things. Again, like I said, I think this episode 6, where red or blue, right? I think that was interesting because Red's name is Blue. And, you know, when we had the conversation, when Jewel and I had the conversation, she said, you know, about red pill, blue pill. We live in a society where everybody's trying to make so many, you know, I guess, descriptors or whatever, metaphors, I don't know, for life and this, that, and the other. And what is a man and what is not a man? And what is a friend and what is not a friend? And what decisions do we make to come into real world, especially in our relationships? I'm going to tell you what touched me in episode 6, probably more than anything else. The fact that Naomi kept it a buck. When he was describing the reality of the time that they're in for her, and she asked, what am I like in your reality? And he starts saying all this stuff about her and how he sees her and all this, that, and the other. And she said, that's about you. What about me? Because remember, he says, I know you. And then he had to admit, well, I don't know you, you know, because she's like, then why are you always searching for me? Why are you always looking for me in your timelines? And I think that there's also this dynamic. I've heard it. I've worked with men pretty much my whole life. You know, a lot of guys can't say I've worked with women my whole life, but I think almost every woman can say I've worked with men my whole life. And I've heard men in the jobs that I've done, you know, always talk about how they want a woman that's like this, untouched and perfect in their eye. This is the Madonna complex. Haven't had a lot of bed partners or whatever. Funny how that doesn't work on the other side, right? You know, the hypocrisy of that, right? And then what is wife material? He sees her as wife material. as mother material, right? And he doesn't even really know her. His idea of who she is, she's a nurse, she's a nun, she's an artist, you know? Whereas Buddy, everyone in the asylum sees her on TV as an entertainer, and they're like, you know, like how guys who like the hot lady or whatever, she's everybody's girl. And he thinks Naomi is just one person. That's the one that he wants for him. I thought that was really interesting, and I think that's how it's a different dynamic. A story written by a man with men's questions, I think, and men's views. And I thought it was brilliant and also very smart, but also very tricky. I really do believe AMC dropped the ball on this because it should have been explored through a wider audience. I hope what this does for Tubi, though, is open up the game. Because look, nerds, blurs, we like sci-fi, okay? We like smart content. We like things that we can ask questions about. A lot of people watch TV, watch movies, and say, I don't want to be thinking when I'm watching TV. I don't want to be, I'm thinking every time because I think every day. I think all day. So it's okay for me to watch something. And I'm wondering, what did the artist think about this? What did the director think about this? What does the actor think about this acting? In this society where everybody seems to have something to say, there are some things I don't want to know about. Like, I don't want to know every actor's views on everything. But what I do want to know is when you pick this role, when you pick this movie, when you do this thing, what are you bringing us? What are you bringing us to see? You know, I like all content, all movies. But I tell you, when I watch something that is presented through the lens of Blackness, it gives me an equal perspective because our community is so diverse. You know, our community is multifaceted in many, many ways with many, 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 many distinct issues. You know, but there's beauty in all of it. There's beauty in understanding. There's beauty in intellect. There's beauty in comedy. There's beauty in horror, if you write it right, right? Sinners is a prime example. This was smart because of all the technology that was in it. I just thought it was dope. I'm like, not real for 2023. Maybe an idea of what we wish 2023 would have been like instead of what 2023 was. But I tell you what, I thought it was sharp. And I also thought for whatever that budget was, that driverless car, all this technology, even the machine that's used and the new technology with the holographic phones and stuff, that was smart. That was cool to me. That was like, you know, I like that. I like that. That's how I, when I was a young girl growing up, that's what I thought. By the 2000s, low key, I thought we were going to have all of that. I really, really did. Imagine my disappointment. Okay, you know, I remember when phones were big, giant phones, flip phones, and everything. Now we're getting to some cool stuff. Take one step forward, 10 steps back, right? But as a blur, if I see this stuff and it tracks for me, I'm like, that's really smart. Jewel, you have a mic. I keep saying that you have the mic. That's so cool. I'm going to stop doing it. Jewel, what do you think?
Okay, thank you. I think a great perspective. Thank you so much, Nikita, for that. I think the discussions need to be had, and they were great discussions all around. I can't wait to hear what other people think and how other people feel. I think when we get to the lack of substance from Damascus in episode 5 to episode 6, we come to an understanding that he needs to fill up his tether. He needs to fill up his book. It's empty. And he's not going to be able to use anybody else for it. And he's made a decision. I think I am left with a lot more questions than I had answers. I had way more answers between episodes 1 to 3. I think I like the way Naomi calls him on after the camera crew leaves. She goes, now that we alone and now we're not doing it for the cameras, what's up with the bugs? And he insists they're not bugs, they're isopods. And she's like, come on now, it's a little roachy. And us Black folks, we don't do that. Come on now. And he's like, okay, you're right. I that's like, oh, of course she's right. Ew. Before she knew he was some sort of sociopath. Which I don't know why that didn't come across as sociopathic. What? Sorry for all the entomologists out there. I don't do bugs. I will annihilate bugs. So yeah, if we friends, don't let me know, because I'll just make sure I go get a can of Raid, and well, that wouldn't do either of us well. So, but I think she asks him that, and he gives a pretty deep answer. He needed to not feel loss when loss happened, and focusing on these bugs, roaches, they're a dime a dozen. They'll always be there. They look exactly the same. Whatever I invest in them or don't invest in them, I can be a mediocre, not engaged individual, and they will still survive and thrive. And I won't feel like a jerk or like crap when things happen, because they really essentially don't need me. And that's kind of like a metaphor to his friendships, right? He seeks out individuals, or he is surrounded by individuals where he really doesn't have to put anything into it, because he don't need to get anything out of it, because he's as empty as the relationships he has. And it's only fulfilling when his feelings are real to him, which is why I agree with Nikita when Naomi's like, you told me everything how you feel. That's about you, but you didn't tell me about me. So I thought that was pretty poignant. I think because I'm left with more questions, I think because we're at a place where who is running the show, who's piloting the ship, how you land in a plane and we ain't even got answers yet. None of this makes sense. What is reality? What does it mean? How is it defined? I think it's a really good conversation that needs to be had within the Black community, within the men in our community, in terms of technology versus reality, what we do to self-medicate. That's a big thing. You know, there's a lot of self-medication, and I feel that. I many years ago, people said that about gamers, you know, and it was across the world. It's not just our community. We have our own methodologies of self-medication, but it was very common to hear people converse about gamers not leaving their chair, being found dead in their chair, or, you know, doing just all up in it. And he's addicted to this reality because he has the power, or should. We know that he doesn't. He should have the power and the control to be able to make it whatever he wants to then feel, because life gives him no feeling. And there's a lot to be said. Like I said, there's a lot of themes, and self-medication is one of them. And I felt that. I felt that. Not trusting anyone, I felt that. There's a lot of good conversation. I think given all of the wonderful actors, those of our past, those new faces, and all the questions left behind, and the real thoughts and thematic point of the show, I think it warrants a season two. I can't wait to see. They got to answer these questions. I need to know. I need to know where we're going from here. What is real? What is not? So, Tubi, if you're listening, we need a season two. We need it yesterday, not in, you know, 50, 70 months. We need a season two. You need to bring everybody back. We need to know why he knows these things. Is his name really Damascus? Who's the Marcus? Like, I mean, I'm not even good with names to begin with. You see what I said with Martin Lawrence? Like, I'm dyslexic half of the time. Well, you can't do that. I need to know. The metaphors of blue pill, red pill, it's important. Again, with stereotypes, you know, we have gang members that hold on to those two colors, and they fight against those two colors. We have the Matrix and the idea of which one do you pick, which one is correct, where's do you, which reality do you want? There's so many layers on that, and there's so many themes and metaphors. I would like to see you answer these questions for us. I would love to be able to, with another season, get up from my chair, walk outside, touch grass, take a deep breath, and be like, whoa, that was so deep. That was so cool. What? No way. And I felt that way in episodes 1 through 3. And episodes 4 through 6, I'm left going, what? No answers? Come on, man. It felt so cliffhanger, which speaks great because retrospectively, if we're talking about the older shows, we had cliffhanger after cliffhanger after cliffhanger after cliffhanger. I mean, who shot JR? People still talking about it. So, you know, I want to know. Inquiring minds want to know. And this was a really Black show that deserved a second, third, fourth, maybe even fifth season. There's endless possibilities, endless realities, and more substance to be had. So there's a place for it. Grab another journal, grab another book, fill it up. Let us know. We're hungry. We've said it before on other podcasts. And, you know, we're here. We're ready. We're ready to stream it. We're ready to download it. We're ready to talk about it. And thank you to everyone who watched it and who participated in it. Thank you to the writers, the directors. Thank you for Tubi for giving it a chance, because I would have never known about it. Real talk, I would have never known. So let's continue in this trajectory, because nothing but unlimited potential here. Nikita.
Thank you. Thank you, Jewel. Let me tell you, I really respect your reflective view. When we analyze and isolate these things and break it down and how we see it, you know, I really respect it. I really respect how you see it and how you process it, because it also opens my mind a little bit, because sometimes I can be a little bit narrow in my view and in my criticism. I come from a place of a different time, I guess. And I'm growth. You know, growth is growth. Let's be clear, I'm pretty open to a whole lot of things. That's why I'm a blurt. But I'm also someone who is very, critical, because I'm a techie. So zeros and ones, baby. So I look at things and I'm like, oh, I don't know. Let's see. I really respect your view. And I really respect, what you bring to the table on that. And that's why we're friends, by the way. So I think that this story has to be told. This story is important for a lot of reasons. Mental health and identity, self-discovery, and what it takes for us to grow. And I rarely, this is my first time, not my first time, I think maybe the first time I recognized that I really, really, really had questions, and you know, how Black men, we live in a society that's harsh, and the struggles that young Black men go through. 33 is young, by the way, folks. In 33, you're still trying to find yourself and figure things out, you know. And this was, I think, as real as you could get. And I need to be having some conversations, you know, with my brother's son, you know, and with my other nephew, and maybe my brother and I talk all the time. My brother and I, you know, we communicate, but I know he has a friend that he's had for over 40 years, went to high school with and everything, junior high school, everything. I got friends. I have a lot of my friends are no longer here, but that's life's chances, like, right? Yeah, tomorrow's not promised. We all know that. But I look at it and I never think that I thought to myself, you know, do guys talk to each other? Because sometimes women don't talk to each other, but women are more shady about it, honey. So, you know, we talk about, sometimes not too, and not direct. But when we have friends, I think our friends are a lot of times lifetime friends. I don't often wonder, do men have lifetime friends? Do men have how they see things? I mean, I just thought this was an interesting view inside the mind of a young man that's going through so much. And that mental health is something that we cannot ignore. It is important for our young, for our old, for our middle. It is important for us as a society. And I don't believe that it's a color thing. I think everybody needs to be looking at their mental health and really, really paying attention to it. And I thought this was a great message for us, for our community. So I think it's a good story. I want to see a part two. I want to know what's going on. I agree with Jewel, everything that she said, clap, clap, clap. And I'm very, 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 very curious. Jennifer, what did you think?
Y'all had to excuse me. I'm nursing a cold here. this thing was very interesting. These last three episodes, I agree with most of what you ladies have already mentioned. I noticed a lot of the same things that you both noticed. And thank you for, you know, inviting me to participate again. Yay. Here for it. Always, as you know. But I guess I want to try to mention some of the things that maybe I didn't, I don't know, maybe sent me down some, you know, little rabbit holes or a thinking pattern that maybe I hadn't been to in a while. So, I do have to say, in general, I really didn't take anything at face value about this series until it got to the last episode. Then I was like, oh, junk, what's going on? By the time we got to the last episode, I was like, wait a minute, hold on. Wait a minute. What is going on? What's actually going on now? Because I was already sort of confused from the first three episodes. I started watching four or five. Then by the time I got to six, I was like, hold up. Y'all messing with me now. See, I felt like somebody was playing this. I was like, okay, where? Oh, gosh. I was like, okay, now where is the camera? Because y'all is messing with me. Okay, this is the way I felt by the time I got to episode six. So by the time I got to episode six and I was watching it and I was like getting shock after shockwave about what is actually going on here. What's going on? What's going on? What is really going on with this dude? Oh my gosh. And I was wondering that from the very beginning. Okay, so what's because a lot of things were odd in this reality that this Damascus was living in. A lot of things were odd. So by the time I get to episode six, it all came to, you know, a full turn. And I was like, OK, so now I need to go back and watch all the rest of them again, because I was like, my instinct was that something ain't right. If my instinct was correct, I was like, yeah, something ain't right. And it ain't right, because a lot of stuff is not going that well for this guy. And it made me feel very connected to him and very empathetic towards him and very sympathetic towards him. I mean, this character, his whole being just resonated with me on here. And I know, you know, he's supposed to be this made up person, but you know, that's the thing about sci-fi and whatever entertainment that we choose. We choose it and we continue to watch it because it draws us, and it kept drawing me in. So some of the things that drew me in was when I rewatched episode four, the Thanksgiving episode, was that Shekinah sound like a black woman. I'm sorry. I was like, why does Shekinah sound like a black woman? I was like, and it started making me think about, okay, what does Shekinah mean? What's the symbolism there? And is this really, it started making me think that maybe this is really some sort of manifestation of this Damascus's mother. Like, is he like manifesting this reality where his mother is his AI assistant? And just, you know, that's what I started thinking. Then, I was getting shocked because I was like, okay, so why does Thanksgiving feel more racist, sir? I was like, how does that happen? Like, either Thanksgiving is already racist. How can it feel more racist? I don't understand. It was just stuff like that was being said in this, you know, during the episode that was like catching me like different, in a different way than before, in any of the previous episodes. Then I was like, why is Uncle 40 named Uncle 40? And I started to, because I'm trying to figure out if I want to reveal to them. Anyway, okay, I'm just going to say it. I hung around a lot of young, hard-headed boys when I was in my youth. And so I understood the connotation of 40 and what that means. So I was like, so why is Uncle 40 named after some malt liquor? I don't understand. I was trying to break that down too. So it was just a lot of things that was jumping out at me. The whole story that Lynn Whitfield, clap, clap, clap for when Lynn Whitfield and Martin Lawrence getting back together on the screen for this episode. I was like, yeah, I haven't seen them together since Thin Line Between Love and Hate. That's the last time I saw them in anything together. So I thought that was cool, but I was like, why is she telling this long and elaborate story about Abraham Elijah Mingo Nantucket? Like, why is this slave, it's ex-slave? I'm like, oh God, why? What is this? I started just laughing because I was like, this is so ridiculous. Why is his name this long? And why is she telling this whole complicated story? And I mean, it was so over the top. It was just too much. I was like, you're doing too much, man. Why are y'all doing so much in this episode? Why is this so much? And then I was like, I noticed that the dad, I also noticed a scene about Redford's in this reality that he went visited. Redford, his dad peeped game and he was like, you know, my son trifling. I was like, yeah, because that's some craziness. Like that whole thing where he was taking the blame and Damascus taking the blame for Redford. And I was like, why? What kind of relationship is this? Like, I don't know. I started thinking maybe he wanted to go to this reality to see what kind of friend Red is, and to explore the boundaries of their relationship, and maybe if he was supposed to see that or maybe not. I don't know, because in the end of that scene or that whole little story, Red is asking him, "Are we really friends?" You know, after he comes out of dirt and he actually goes to visit Red's house and, you know, and all that. And I was like, he seems like he's a really genuinely worried at that point. I started thinking maybe Red really has some genuine, like, good feelings towards Damascus. He was like, man, what's going on with you? He was really trying to check in, you know, and that's a good thing to, like, check in with folk. It used to be a thing I think I saw online where people would say that about how you do that with your young children who are going through a lot in this world and things that are changing. I don't know if it had anything to do with what happened during the pandemic and it was just affecting everybody so deeply and personally, but he was just checking in with his friend. And I thought that was dope, because I was like, sometimes we just need to do that. We need just to be like, what's going on with you? Like, really and truly listen and understand that something might be going, something mentally is going on, and you need to, like, check in with them and see what they thinking and make sure that they're not thinking something that's going to, like, lead them down a bad path, like, you know, a self-destructive path. Right. So I thought that was interesting. And by the time I got to the end of this episode, I started paying attention to the different names that the characters have. Like some characters' names change. Red's little girl was named Roshana. In the earlier episode, I think he was calling her Tarantula. And I was like, why you name a little girl, nickname a little girl Tarantula? I don't even understand it, but okay. So in episode 5, this was weird to me too, this whole episode. It was giving me really bad Norman Bates vibes. It was giving really creepy Norman Bates Hotel type vibes this whole episode. And then, of course, by the time it got to the end of the episode, I was like, that's right. I knew it. I knew this was giving Norman Bates. And I was like, there's the proof right there at the end when they open the little casket and you see what's going on. And I'm like, what in the world is going on? It just makes you think that there's something really deep going on with Damascus. I mean, just really deep. Is it just his grief? Is it just like, he's trying to figure out how to, you know, operate in the world as a young man, as a young black man. I mean, he did mention that in the beginning, I'm a black man in 2023 and the world is inhospitable. And I was like, is he just trying to deal with that? I don't know. I was still like questioning that. And it really was shocking to me, I guess, that he was like really searching for his mother in another reality. Like, it's like he still wasn't accepting her death. He still hadn't accepted it yet. And I guess that was him. And I guess I started thinking that these episodes are showing like the stages of grief that he's going through about his mother's death. Cause I find out, I put together that, because he mentions it in one of these episodes. I don't know if I wrote down which one it was, but that his mother actually passed away on Thanksgiving Day. Like, wow. Like, that's devastating. Like, because I like Thanksgiving. I like the holiday, the food, everything. It's one of my favorite holidays for several reasons. And just imagine, I was trying to imagine what it would have felt like to me if my mother had passed away on that specific day. Like, that would have been like devastating for me also. So I was trying to figure all of that out. And at the end of episode 5, I was like, so he went back. He did dirt one time, and then he didn't find his mother. He just found, you know, the weird old situation with Naomi again. For whatever reasons, I still didn't like that he was still focusing on this Naomi lady. I mentioned this before. But I was like, so why does he, it started making me think, why does he feel so out of place in his mother's heart? Like, why is his calculation that his mother was always doing more for other people? Like, why is that his calculation? Why is that a calculation he's making? And it just made me wonder about the relationship between mothers and their sons, or mothers and their daughters, and, you know, mother and child. Like, that relationship is such a foundational relationship in anybody's life, right? Your mother, the person who brought you into the world, or even if she isn't that person, the person who nourishes you, who takes care of you when you can do, you know, does things for you that you couldn't do for yourself when you couldn't do for yourself. So it's such a foundational relationship, and it started making me think about why this man's world is sort of looking like so discombobulated. It's like it's so out of order because the woman that grounded him is gone. So I started, you know, it just made me feel more, you know, feel more connected and empathetic towards this character. So by the time I got to episode 6, I was like, what? Of course, like I said, I was like, what? His name ain't Damascus? I was like, so what's really going on? I was like, so confused. I was like, so he's in an asylum? Like, and he's been in a permanent vegetative state for 18 months? Like, really? This is what's going on? And the whole thing where he was like in the airplane, I was like, what is going on with that? Oh my God. Then I was like, I was finding out Lloyd is real. The whole story about his pit bulls is real. I was like, oh my gosh, this is what is going on. Like, oh my God. So he's in therapy. He's in therapy. He all of a sudden wakes up. Marcus, they're calling him DeMarcus. God, you found out that Shayna is real. You know, Drew is real. This is what I'm like, just writing down all these revelations. I was like, Naomi is real in this reality. Like, all of these people that he been, you know, visiting in these other realities, they actually are like in his real life. But I'm trying to figure out, and I agree, they need to do a second season because I need to know the answers to all these doggone questions, because I'm trying to figure out, okay, dude, if you was unconscious, I studied this. If you were unconscious, how in the world you knew all these people was around you? Like, for real, though. I need to know how you knew that Naomi was there nursing you and all the... How did you know... if you arrived there in this state, how in the world do you know these people? I was like, just all out of whack about that whole situation. I was like, are y'all messing with me again? This is what I started thinking again. I was just going back and forth in my mind, like, is this the real reality? Which one is the real reality? I need to know. Is it Damascus or DeMarcus? I need to know. They need to dig a second season because I need to know. Is it Damascus or is it DeMarcus? Okay. Which one is it? I need to know. Because I started thinking DeMarcus, and then I started thinking, is it probably still Damascus? I don't know. They need to make another some more episodes because I need to know. And then I start thinking about the names of the characters again. And I started thinking, okay, comparing Damascus reality with DeMarcus reality. So why in the world in DeMarcus reality, everybody's name is the same as Damascus reality, except himself in red or blue? Why are those the only two with the different names? Like, why? Like, in most of the realities, everybody's name is pretty much the same. Except these two, except him in red or blue. Is it Damascus in red or DeMarcus in blue? Which one is it? I don't know. So I started focusing more on one last thing I'm going to mention. He says something poignant in episode 6. He comes to this clarity of focus, he calls it. And whether you want to believe it's Damascus or DeMarcus, what he's doing here is what I feel is noble and wise. He's trying to figure himself out. And he says something about knowing thyself. And if you remember from that was something that was mentioned in the earlier episode. I can't remember if it was episode 1 or episode 2. And it's Naomi's character that says it to him, like, know thyself. And I think it's very bold and noble, wise for him to like embark on this journey. It seems like anyway, at the end of this episode where he's talking about, I want to do this. This is my year to be a martyr. And this is what martyrdom looks like. And I was like, wow, that was sort of dope. I was like, he's trying to figure it out for himself. Cause I was like, y'all leaving the burden on the people that's watching to figure this out. And I'm just like, feeling like, why he ain't figured it out? He should want to know more than me, you know, the character who going through this. He should want to straighten out all of this, all of what seems like a lot of chaos. He should want to straighten it out. So I thought maybe that's where that's going to be going. And so I was thinking, I was like, maybe that'll be a good idea, dude, because you seem really confused by a lot of stuff. And it also made me think about how in the beginning of the series, he was talking about how he made himself unknowable. Right. So it's a good thing to me to see him like go from that, from like being unknowable. And I remember his strength telling him, you know, maybe you've made yourself unknowable to your, you know, your own self. Right. So I was like, yeah, that's not great. Know thyself. That's a good goal. And so by the end, I was like, okay, we're going to see what happens because y'all need to tell me because. This whole thing and the whole thing about the black journal and the tether. I was like, oh my gosh, what is going on? Cause at the end, it was odd to me. It's still a question mark to me. It was odd to me that he seemed to be accepting it. He was telling everybody in this, you know, in his group, in his counseling group, you know, in the group therapy session, he was seemed to be accepting it in his therapy session when it was just him and his shrink. He seemed to be accepting that this is his new reality. This is his real, you know, life. But also at the end, I noticed that he's sitting in the darkness of his room. that he's now sharing with Dornell, because you know he can't be in there with Mr. Blue anymore after the incident happened between them. And I was like, you know, he can't be in there with Blue anymore. So he's in the darkness with Dornell. The room he now shares with Dornell, and he's writing his thoughts down in his tether or his black journal. And I just thought it was interesting that this is what he's doing. And I was trying to think of, I was thinking about what that meant symbolically. Like, is he really accepting this reality, or is it all just a ploy for him to get back to Damascus reality? So again, it's still up in the air by the end of all these episodes. Is it Damascus or is it DeMarcus? Which one? And I believe that's what makes this show like so amazing. Like, you could make your own conclusion. It don't have to be the same as mine. It could be different. It could, you know, you could see it in a different way. And I felt like maybe that was part of the writer's point, that we need these different perspectives to see our way forward, to advance to where we would like to be. And that's kind of where I ended up by the time I finished going through the last three episodes. This is a really good series. AMC, I don't know what to say to y'all. Y'all missed out. Thanks for letting me share my thoughts, as always.
Thank you, Jennifer. The mic was acting kind of banana cakes. Thank you. Thank you for all of that. As a matter of fact, I appreciate your perspective. I also appreciated the questions you presented yourself. And, you know, 100 on all of that. I think this show is important because it makes you think and it makes you pay attention. I would be remiss if I didn't mention the one lone white gentleman in the show, Joshua Mickle, playing Sebastian Charles in the asylum. He had white guilt, which I thought was so funny. He became a liberal and he couldn't even play chess, and he took the white chess piece and he was like, go measure. And I don't know, that tickled me. That tickled. I mean, but you know, but I respected his play in it. So, and I wanted to make sure and give him his props, because he was also in the pretentious critic in the art room, in the gallery show, like episode 2, I think. So thank you. Thank you for that. I think that this is an important show, and I hope everyone watches it. I hope that everyone listening to us, you know, really, really gives Tubi a shot. Tubi is free, and it's going to have, I believe, it's going to be the hub for new creativity. And I think that we need to really seriously give it a look, because this was a seriously good show, which normally you would have seen on a larger network or a larger streaming network. And we got to see it on Tubi. Pretty dope. And it's going to change the look. I remember when I'm going to sound super old, back in the day before television existed. No, but when streaming first came out and everybody didn't think streaming was going to work, you know, there was Napster, there was Free Hulu, and you know, people started seeing value in these things, and these things are, you know, now like Spotify and are like Netflix. And these catalogs are very important. I think that Black creatives need to also be able to, you know, get that streaming money, you know, because there's a lot of money to be made. And I also think that's going to be the way of the future. People are staying home and people are watching these great shows from the comfort of their home. I'm not saying that theaters are going to go the way, because, you know, drive-ins are cool if you have them. For those of you that might be too young, you know, drive-ins a good thing. Might come back. You know, theaters are cool, and so is streaming. And I think that Tubi could be that next big thing. Look, look, our society changes so quickly and moves so fast. To see something like this, all it needs is one good shot. So I hope everyone supports it and supports Demascus, D-E-M-A-S-C-U-S on Tubi. It's sci-fi, it's comedy. And let me be very clear. For me, the comedy is laughing at the stereotypes that people seem to think of who we are, where this actually shows us as multifaceted as we are as a community. And I thought it was very well done. So Demascus on Tubi, check it out. We now are, just this podcast is a new thing. And I think we are, you know, really, really, really getting to do a cool thing. Blurred's talking about blurred stuff. Blurred women talking about blurred stuff. Blurred Black women, which blurred Black nerd blurred talking about these things. And really, really talking about the stuff that matters to us, the stuff that interests us, the stuff that's cool to us. And we hope it's cool to you. I want to thank those that have been downloading our episodes and giving us an opportunity, giving us a look, giving us a listen. And we hope you enjoy. We hope that we are speaking to those things that you might have questions to. Also, Jewel posted a bunch of questions on X recently concerning Demascus. Give it a check. Give it a look on Blurred's Word on X. And give our Instagram a follow, Blurred's Word on Instagram, Blurred underscore Word on Instagram. Give us a chat on our site, Blurred's Words. And know this, that in chat, mostly we do this every Saturday at 12 p.m. Eastern time. You can actually come in the room. This is cool. This is an interactive podcast, but let's be clear, you know, introverts might not come in. That's usually the problem with that. So introverts, if you're listening, come on in. All right. So I wanted to put that out there. Jewel?
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much, Jennifer. Thank you, Nikita. And thank you for joining us today. Whether you were listening for 5 minutes or 15, we want to know what you have to say and what you thought of the show. Thank you so much. Demascus on Tubi, episodes 4, 5, and 6. Check it out. Stream it. It's a dope show. Thanks, Nikita.
Okay, so next week, you guys, Wednesday, part 2, very excited, coming up. I hope you all are going to watch. It comes on September the 3rd on Wednesday, Wednesday on Wednesday. So September the 3rd, part 2 premieres on Netflix, and next weekend, we'll be talking about it. One of the things I want to say before we end today is that I believe that art, and I kind of touched on this last week. I have a strong belief on this. I was thinking about this as I was watching this show. I was thinking about this as I was watching a couple of other shows, you know, Alien, things like that. You know, The Institute, all these different shows. You know, I think it is so important that when we look at things, we be people who look at things. But when blurred nerds look at things, I think that the important question to ask is, what is the author? Because I like books. I like books. I like video games. And I like movies and TV shows and anything that reflects new and nuanced ideas. And I think it is important if they answer the question that if the question that they ask in their writing or they present is answered by the movie or the actors presenting the movie, then they have done their job. I have read a lot of very strange critiques about different movies and things, and I often wonder, are they watching the same movie that I'm watching? Are they watching the same show? What are they watching? You know, or are they even watching it? You know, one of my favorite critics is Ebert. I like Siskel and Ebert, 2 thumbs up, 2 thumbs down. They are classic movie critics. And I think that it's kind of important. I think it's important to get actors out there. I think it's important to recognize the work that they do because this is work. This is their job. And, you know, this is how they make their living. And I think we should support that I think that we as a community, as Black women, as Black people, we should support people in our community that make movies. Now, I watch all kinds of movies. It doesn't have anything to do with race. I think I like indigenous movies, movies about indigenous folks. I like historical movies. I'll say it like that. I like movies that are, you know, fiction, nonfiction, science fiction, and horror happen to be my favorite, because I'm a huge Star Trek fan. Science fiction and horror happen to be my favorite. But if you see something great, you know, put it out there. Let everybody know. And whoever, you know, the reason, the way I found out about Damascus was someone on the social media said, there's this cool show out, and you should check it out. And I said, oh, let me go check this out. Now, I know my siblings were already watching it on Tubi, what stuff was on Tubi. So, you know, and I'm, you know, not elitist or anything, but I've been watching all these other, you know, shows. And this was so brilliant. And I think there's going to be a lot more of that if we support it. If they put it out in the theater, let's go to the theater. That's why Sinners made so much money. If they put it on Disney, let's watch it on Disney. Whether you be a woman, whether you be a man, whether you be white, Black, Asian, whatever, let's support these actors out here doing work to entertain us. Because, man, every now and then, you know, you got to give Jack the jacket and give credit where credit is due. We lose a lot of good movies because people don't support it. And if you support it, then talk about it. You talk about everything else. Talk about what you love. Talk about what you like. Let us know so that we can find it too. So this could have been, you know, just stuck on the shelf in AMC, and like Jewel and Jennifer both said, Tubi gave it a chance. And now it's out there and we're talking about it. So talk about what you love. Talk about what you like. Share it with us. Share it with the world and let us see it. And again, thank you all for, you know, those of you that have checked out our stuff and those of you that we hope like our stuff. And we'll see you next week. Have a very safe Labor Day weekend. You know, be careful. Hug your family. You just never know, your loved ones. And be safe. Be great. Take care. Bye.
Bye.